This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. A very special episode of High and Mighty because it is March, movie month, May, movie month, March. Still haven't sorted out which version of the alliteration we're going with, but it's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, standing 6'2", 305 pounds. I just got back from Vegas. From the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, it's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson Maine, from A Star Is Born, we must replace you. Abortion is healthcare. That'll get you around for a few more weeks, brother. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, my newly signed co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur, currently too deaf to respond to his name being shouted out, but he is in the studio with me. Speaking of in the studio with me, joining me for the first time guest, this is one of those first time, long time. I've been a long time listeners of them, and they are first time guests of me from Cows in the Pod, from the podcast Cows in the Field. It's Justin and Laura.
That was amazing. It was so great to see this live, something I've listened to lots. I have a suggestion for replacing Jackson Maine.
Oh.
So Lenny Cohen from Maestro.
Laura, Benny Laura, Bernstein.
Do you have the thing?
What? I'll just serve it to you. Do it off of here. It's raining through your fucking nose.
When he's delivering
cocaine.
That's
my favorite moment, is when he puts the tray above his head. He goes, I'll just serve it to you.
I should just replace it with Bradley Cooper overacting, like whatever role and it comes next. I'll just be Rocket Raccoon for a little while or whatever.
Right. Or whatever his character is in Burnt. He's just yelling at everybody.
Oh, Dr. Chef, I believe.
Dr. Chef, yes. I kind of like Burnt.
I kind of liked Burnt as well. I like kitchen stuff. I'm a sucker for it. I'm a sucker for heisty type movies where everyone's got a specialty. And then when you think about it, that's kind of what a kitchen is in a way too. Like that's why I like X-Men and The Bear for the same reasons. Like everyone has their territory or the thing they do right. And when they get together, it's magic, or it's, you know, the original Chicago Beef or whatever the fuck it's called.
Also, yeah, it's the same thing. It's like the heist thing. I also think the other one of his that I really liked was Limitless. The
Loved
one where
Limitless.
He, yeah, so that one, we got to do that one on Cows in the Field because it's like you could do a back to back Limitless and Lucy.
I was going to say,
these
Lucy.
These are like people unlocking their brains to.
Yeah. Lucy. So what if you used all of it?
Lucy is bad.
Yes.
Limitless is not great either, but it does make it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, I didn't think the movie was that good, and someone goes, but imagine you had the Limitless pill, and you're like, oh yeah, and then like that makes the movie good enough that it lets you go, imagine you had the Limitless pill.
Yeah,
it's a good premise.
I mean, it is a cautionary tale though, because things do not end well for the Limitless guy, right? He gets into all kinds of, doesn't he also like force, there's some flash forward flashbacks. Anyway, it's been a long time since I've seen
it.
It's been too long. It's been way too long. Let's stop down. We'll watch Limitless and we'll come back. We'll argue about it.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. Just bring it all around.
Segue right there. Professional.
That's right. We had suggested arguing about movies. And then part of the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is because, you know, you talk to a lot of people on your show. We talk to people on our show about movies and things. And we very rarely. Argue or disagree super explicitly with one another on the, especially when we have a guest.
Mm-mm.
In part because, you know, this person carved out some time in their day to come on our show, and I don't want to be a jerk to them if they're like, oh, I really loved this movie, and I'm like, ah.
And you guys are also don't want to be the thing of like, you have a guest on, now you're having like proxy relationship arguments in like reference to like the King Arthur or something like that, where you're like rolling in with a little bit of like just marriage beef, and then you're like, all right, well, I'm fucking, oh, you think that's who fucking Guinevere's supposed to be, like, you know, just ready to-
our show is a way for us to work out issues in our marriage, definitely.
Yeah. That's come up a few times,
but typically, and well, you know, and so, and we will disagree with each other when, you know, when it's us. But I think the interesting thing for me is, okay, so what the kind of thing that got me thinking about this and wanted to talk to you about it, John, is so we're all so uncomfortable with arguing, Like, you know, like disagreeing, arguing, it's like, it's really, it pains me to like be in disagreement with other people. And yet it's my job. So
I was going to say, it pains
it's
you?
It's my job. I'm really? A philosophy professor. This okay. is what I do for a living, is like argue with people. But I find it very uncomfortable to be in a direct disagreement with someone. I have to do it all the time. But what I'm trying to figure out is, like, when it comes to movies, these are things which, I mean, does it really matter if you put Maestro above, I don't know, Lucy or whatever in the, right. yeah, I don't know. And who cares, right? But yet, I feel the same degree of discomfort when I'm disagreeing with someone about a movie. This happened to me just recently, actually, just like yesterday.
With what? What are the
Napoleon.
Who were you talking about this with?
Well, I don't want to name names, so but you know, I was disagreeing with
what
someone
level
about,
of friendship? Like, you know, is it like a boss, a colleague?
Yeah, yeah, like a colleague, you know, like acquaintance. And I'm not going to give the context of the argument or what was being disagreed about. Just the point was just like, yeah, I felt uncomfortable. Like, I was like, okay, now we have, like, you know, they didn't like it. I liked it, mm-hmm. and we were in, you know, and there's like that thing that happens where you feel like. When somebody's like, ooh, I didn't like that. And I don't know, it feel like you feel like part of you has been wounded by that or something.
I think
like that.
You're stumbling upon my thesis, I think, right there a little bit. Just, I'm going to rewind a little bit. And the reason the idea of arguing about movies came up is because my wife, Tiffany, and I watch a shit ton of movies together, which based... anecdotally upon list from listening to your podcast, I'm assuming you guys watch at least two movies a month together, or at least you are, you know, like at minimum. So, and have varied taste. If for listeners of the podcast know that of like what Justin likes and what Laura likes, I now have an idea of what those things are parasocially. Yes. But it's one of those things where we don't really argue about, like, so co-watching movies is a whole nother thing with your partner, because like you're trying to like, this is what I want to do this evening, but I also do not want either of us to have a bad time. So like you're playing and like, but arguing about movies is this thing that you said it, Justin, you said like, I feel like a little part of me gets hurt. And yeah. I think that's something that's happened in the last X amount of years, where we've like attached our own like personality, our own self-worth to our fandoms, or our favorite directors, or our favorite films, our favorite artists, or our favorite restaurants, our favorite type of food. It's like all this like personal branding that has happened that was like not something like my dad was an avid movie fan and like a consumer of art, but like, God, like, Johnny, I don't have fucking time to argue about if Limitless is a good movie or not. You know, like, I got to work. I got to put food on the table. Like, and it's a sign of, like, privilege and, you know, progress that we're not worried about the draft, so we can sit around and argue about Limitless. Our lives are so devoid of conflict. We're not fighting our neighbors for property and, you know, stealing, like, so because of that, we get to just have these proxy battles over Tenet or whatever.
Yeah.
But not purposely bringing up a triggering movie.
You've just triggered us both. Yeah.
Two different directions.
Sorry,
at once.
We're only talking about Tenet now for the next hour. You did it. You said the magic word.
I saw it Tuesday in IMAX. Yeah. I was like,
oh my God. I'm sorry. That is triggering.
That is triggering. Yeah, we couldn't make it to fucking New York.
New England didn't come through for us.
Yeah. We couldn't make it to New York. You have like a young child at home. You're like, Mommy and Daddy are driving to New York to see Tenet again.
I mean, Mommy and Daddy drive to Providence to see movies.
Look,
but
that was
New
an
York
hour.
It was a little tougher.
Yes, three.
Do you think we've gotten, I was going to say that I think we've gotten better. Or
you and me.
Yes, about being less precious.
Yes.
About our fandoms, maybe, or like, or about how it might feel when another person yucks your yum.
I agree about that. I mean, I think
do you remember when we almost got divorced over Hiroshima Mon Amour?
Okay, so we gonna tell this story now?
No, I mean, the context is we had a newborn and we were cranky and tired, both of us. And
well, the fight is never about the thing.
Especially because Laura didn't even see Hiroshima
Mon
Amour.
She fell asleep.
This is what happened was, you know, Justin actually like started to have this like film awakening.
Yeah, when we had a child.
When we had a child, yeah. Ethan would Justin would stay up with our baby and bounce him at 3 a.m. and watch all the movies on the Criterion Channel.
Yeah.
And then I would wake up the next morning because we would stagger our night. And then Justin would tell me about these movies that he saw.
Yeah.
And I was like having FOMO, but also totally did not have the bandwidth for it. But I was like, I am also intellectual, too. I want to watch these movies, too. And so I tried to sit through one and passed out immediately. But then I woke up and very rudely said, well, that was kind of boring, even though I didn't really see it because I fell asleep right away. And Justin was like, this is why I don't watch movies with you. And I was like, how dare you?
Now, this fight sounds familiar because this is where I get upset, too, because I don't care if you don't like the thing I like. But if like Tiffany sits on her phone throughout a whole movie I'm like, oh, have you never seen this? Oh, we should watch. I mean, we've been together for 20 years. So for her to not have seen a movie I've seen is kind of rare at this point. But like, I'm always like, wait, you've never seen this? Oh, fuck. And she's like, oh, I would be down to watch it. I'm like, all right, well, I'm watching this for like the 8th time. There are a ton of movies I want to watch, but I'll rewatch this movie because I want to vicariously live it through you. And I want you, this person whose opinion matters so much to me, I want to hear what you want to say about it. And I don't even care if at the end of the X amount of time, she doesn't like it. But if she doesn't give it the full shake is when I get, like, if I'm like, you were on your phone for most of the beginning. And that's when I start to realize I'm watching the movie like through her, literally, where I'm like,
yeah.
Wait, you didn't even laugh at that? You must have not been paying attention. Because this is like, look at how funny, because I can imagine, and now I've seen this movie too many times, so I've got all this context, and I'm like ruining her experience. I'm like watching her watch the movie, and it's putting her in a self-aware moment, in a self-conscious moment. Yeah, and there's pressure. And then it's also like, what the fuck is he all worked up about? Like, so sometimes I have to be like, I can't show you this unless you are going to fully fucking commit. Because like,
yeah, you got to give it a real chance. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And I think that's where we've come to is like, you are more comfortable with just me with like, if you're like, I want to watch this movie and I can tell you that really does not sound like my jam. I'd rather sleep. Yeah. And you're going to let that be. Whereas like maybe you'd try to argue your way into like doing it together and none of us are happy.
No, that's exactly right. I definitely... Look, you accurately portrayed our disagreement.
Okay, did I or does I do as unfair?
In that instance, for sure. And you know, I think giving it a fair shake, and I totally agree with you, Gabrus, that I like very often when I'm what I want to do when I'm showing someone a movie is like vicariously watch it through them. I also I haven't been thinking about how much pressure that puts on people. Like when I'm like, come over and watch Tenet. And then I'm just like, you better love
it. Do you love it? You'll love it.
Yeah.
You will love it.
It's putting too much pressure on them. Just like I'm like, it's crazy that Tiffany's not giving this movie 100% attention right now. Yeah. It's a little also crazy that bothers me.
Yeah.
Like,
and I have, so
and I have to like
up.
Get in, I have to get. So that's the main thing about arguing about movies. You have to realize. Because like I argue with one of my co-hosts, Ben Rogers, about movies all the time on Action Boys because we have slightly different taste. I actually defer to his taste. I trust his taste more than mine. I'm a little more, he's a little more discerning. So if he likes something, I'm like, well, I'll fucking love it. But I find myself being like, the trick is to care about the other person's opinion, care about your opinion, but not care that they're different.
Yeah, and that's very hard.
Hard.
And that's
that's very difficult. Yeah,
it's very difficult. So I want to offer a diagnosis of why this is hard, because I think it's more than just we're so caught up in today, you know, in like fandom and all that stuff. So I think that when you value something, like when you value a piece of art or a movie or something, part of the valuing isn't just like liking it and just enjoying watching it or whatever. It's getting to make it a part of your identity. So getting to craft who you are as a person who likes this kind of thing. So for instance, think about like a classic case would, this would have been like punks versus disco kids or whatever, you know, like
right, yeah.
You're a punk And that's part of who you are. It's not just that you like punk music, but like it affects how you dress, what kind of things you want to talk about, and so on. And I think it's the same with movies. And maybe it's gotten a little bit more micro in that, like, you're not just like, I like action movies. You're like, oh, I like, you know, McTiernan, or I like whatever. Like, that's my guy. And so we're more discerning than maybe we were in the past. And that probably is a result of the internet. But I think it's all like, I think it's a natural thing to want to make something out of your aesthetic loves, you know? And I think that's why it hurts when somebody disagrees, because totally. You realize that, like, oh, maybe I've made a mistake because they're not seeing it the way I see it. So maybe I've made a mistake and I'm like leading this like mistaken or misguided aesthetic life. Like, maybe my choices are like, you know, gauche rather than cool. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like stepping out and going like, how do you like my outfit? And someone who's important to you going like, I don't know, the shirt doesn't really do it for me. And
yeah,
the hat's kind of boring. You're like, oh, okay.
It hurts.
Yeah.
And it's
that's a split fault there, because we're the ones wearing art as personality.
Well,
whatever you want to call that. Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad thing though to do that. I think it's a very natural and good thing, actually, because I think if you were not to value art above and beyond just going to the museum and looking at it, but actually making it a part of your life to a point where it would hurt you if somebody says, I hate that, I think it's a good thing, because it means that you're embracing a type of aesthetic value that you wouldn't have otherwise got, you know, had you just, you know, been a kind of surface level appreciator of the art, you mm-hmm. know, like you think about it after. So for me, the movie is Tenet, you know, to bring it back to Tenet. When I saw, I didn't just enjoy Tenet, like, Tenet was built up in my mind for over a year because we first saw the trailer in, I think, November 2019. And then, you know, COVID hits.
It had like a weird gap because of the time in that it came out. So it had like an even more of a runway leading to it coming out.
You know? Totally. And then it doesn't, I didn't go see it in the theaters when it first came out. So it's built up even more in my mind. When we see it finally on streaming,
it's been a year and a bit since the trailer dropped.
This is true story. We basically built a home theater to watch Tenet. I mean, this sounds insane when I say this out loud, but it is true.
I actually didn't even feel like there was space for me to not like Tenet. Like, it was overdetermined that I would need to. I joked with my friends. I was like, if I don't like Tenet, like, we're getting a divorce. Like, I have to love it.
It's crazy.
I love it.
There was a lot of pressure. And I felt a lot of pressure.
I have to, and luckily I do.
And I do.
No, and I felt that pressure going into it. I felt that same pressure going into Star Wars The Force Awakens, for that matter. Right? I like going into it feeling like, if this isn't good, I'm going to be really hurt. And that tells you something about yourself. It tells you that you care a lot about this thing. And it's not a bad thing to care about fictions and things like that. They're really cool. And for me, anyway, so it was Tenet. So we saw it, and, you know, I loved it. And it became this thing where I was thinking about it all the time. I was just rolling the scenes over in my mind. We ended up watching it with our son, various parts of it, like, over and over again. So there are scenes from that movie that I've seen hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's different from just like, yeah, I like it. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah. And that's inarguable, like that it's affecting you it's obviously affecting you. Now the question is, why does someone not like it?
Yeah.
Like hurts. How do you prevent that from activating defensiveness?
I know.
And that's hard, because you just, especially if the person's opinion you respect or want to gain approval from or something like that, and that shit hits. Here's my question. Someone you know doesn't like Tenet back and kind of is like, "Meh, it doesn't give it back to you." Does that hurt you more or less than if you tell Chris Nolan, I love Tenet, and he brushes you off? Like, is that heartbreak? Like, if you go to a guy like, dude, I've been obsessed with your movie. I identify as a Tenet. I'm a blah, 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 this. Do the hand gesture. Do everything. And he just goes, well, nice to meet you, Justin. I'll see you around. You know, like, that break your heart more than someone who's like a peer saying like, oh, shut the fuck up about Tenet? Like,
A lot of people say shut the fuck up about Tenet.
Yes, the second one hurts more, because we did go through a 2 year period where it did feel like the people were just like, yeah, okay. And then, you know, I really did, I'm used to that in a sense about Tenet, where people are just like, I don't know, this is Christopher Nolan up his own ass or whatever.
Sure. I think you even like make it, you take whatever hurt that might be and then you reform it into like, well, my personality is not just that I love Tenet, but that I love Tenet so much, I'm going to write articles defending it. Yeah. And my new personality is that I am like a shining knight in armor for Tenet.
Well, that's the thing is another aspect of, and I think this is a natural impulse in a lot of, you know, white guys in their 30s and 40s, but is to like things that not everyone likes. So when not everyone liked Tenet, I was actually kind of into that.
Well, it kind of bolsters your stance a little, where you're like, okay, well, again, I am not an academic, but then it's like defending your thesis is where you find how strong your thesis really is.
Yeah.
So like you're in there going like, okay, people not on the fence about Tenet. All right, it's going to make me like it more. All right, well, now I'm defending Tenet. Now I'm actually starting to buy my own fucking hype, you know? Like,
yeah.
I said this on Tuesday night, where, you know, 1 week ago, I saw Tenet, and I said to myself at the end of it, I'm like, to my buddy I'm with, I go, how does anyone hate this movie? Like, I was like, and that was my response. Not, oh, I fucking love this movie, was, oh, how can anyone hate this movie?
Yeah.
Because, and this will be what I say from here on out. At minimum, if you do not pick up on anything in the movie or give a shit about any of the characters, it's eight heists where cool shit happens. Like eight different things where cool shit happens. And I understand that that's not for everyone, but for me, that's the making of a good movie. And then you add to it the ideas of friendships being developed in opposition to each other. You add a 6 foot tall woman unlocking cars with her feet. Like, amazing. you add a few things, and the movie is just built for me.
Oh my god!
And now I've seen Dune 2 and Tenet in the same week. I think established my 2024 personality.
Yeah. that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Well, I wanted to ask about like the personality thing. Like, you compared it to if somebody doesn't like what you wear, and that does feel extremely personal, like the clothing you choose to express your personality. But do you feel like, Justin, you feel the same that like way about other works, other types of art? Like, I feel like if somebody was like, "Ugh, Metallica, I don't like it," that would not affect you in the same way as if somebody said something about film. No. Or, I mean, because I studied art history. I love Miro. If somebody's like, "Nah, Miro," I would feel really nothing about it, I think, even though I love Miro.
No, I think you pick it. So we can't be aesthetic omnivores in a sense of like, you don't get to be an aesthetic, like, you know, you can't be aesthetically gung-ho about every first, not only type of art, but also within the type of art, you know, every aspect of it. You know, we all are into movies. That's the one we've chosen for the most part. I mean, sports maybe too and stuff, but those things, it's like, and then within movies, you know, like Gayrus, you've chosen like action movies. Like, these are the things that like define you. And for me, it's like sort of time, like mind-bendy movies, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm interested, but I do love art. Like, I did study it. I did give it years of my life. And I don't think that I felt the same way about other people's opinion about art. Even like if somebody, I remember one art historian being like, "Ugh, can you believe she's writing her thesis on Raphael?" Like, you know, one art historian to another, and I was like, "Oh, that's
my least favorite Ninja Turtle."
but I wonder, like, do you think there's anything about film that also lends itself to being feeling more like tied to your personality, to your emotions, because we watch it with people in community at certain points in our life?
So you were thinking that there's something. I see. You were thinking something special about film.
I'm wondering.
That lends itself to this beyond, besides like, you know, paintings or music. I don't
even
think
music,
that's the case. I
think
music
think so?
Is very personal for a lot of people. It's just not as big for me.
It's
and
not
I think
as communal,
paintings,
though, oftentimes.
Look,
well,
paintings,
that's actually not true. Concerts.
Paintings are the kinds of things that, who of our generation gets really into paintings? Not that many people. But before there were movies, I think people got in really into paintings. Yeah. I think it's just a matter of like, you know, demographics and stuff. And for me, well, I just haven't locked in on paintings. But
well, Laura, yeah. I'll throw out some hip fire theory here on that.
Okay.
It's, I think movies, going off kind of what Justin said about painting, movies are more populist, like more people. more people like movies. And I bet you, there are a lot of people who say, I love the movies. Like, I love movies. Whose taste you would disagree with on, like, every step of the way. But if I feel like it's populist. And then I also think it's an American art form, too. So it adds, like, it adds this extra layer, I think, for Americans that, like, it's like it gets a little like sports for us because it's an American, mm-hmm. like, and we turn that, you know, no one's ever like, man, they must have had no American moviegoers like they must have had an amazing time with the process of making this film. Like we're always just like, this movie fucking rules. It's my favorite movie. I'm wearing the fucking hat to the bar tonight. You know what I mean?
There's immediate like accessibility in talking about it and in like connecting with it that makes us all feel like we're on a level playing field for loving or disliking movies. Well, okay. And then maybe that feels more personal when we disagree.
And there seems to be no bar to be a movie enjoyer.
You didn't have to take a class to
So this is the other aspect of the aesthetic life that we build by choosing which things we love. One of them is that it's expressive, right? So you express something about yourself when you're like, I like Tenet or I hate Tenet. You're expressing to someone else something. But if that other person doesn't know Tenet, then it doesn't serve any purpose. Movies are this thing that because they're so populist and stuff, there are these points in space that we can orient ourselves around. And so we can find our people and, and forge little communities of appreciation, you know, little micro communities of appreciation with one another about them. And so I think that's probably why movies have been that thing for a lot of people. But it doesn't have to be movies because think about punk music or whatever, you know, like when I was in high school, it was music that really defined who I was and what music I listened to was like the really important
song lyrics you put on your away message was like, kind of like away between away messages, what you like stickers or wrote on your binders and what music you listened to how you dressed was kind of like how you conveyed who you were.
Oh my God. The aim away message. Just did are you too old to have
no,
an aim?
No, I had aim. Yeah.
What did you, what was like, did you put music, did you put lyrics on there?
I don't remember.
Come on.
I don't remember.
I definitely put movie quotes. I definitely put lyrics. I definitely put like cheeky jokes of like, you know, like, and then when I was, you know, eventually dating, you'd put like weird love missives that you were like, you're the blue cheese to my hot sauce. And like, that would just be like what you wrote.
Do you remember like what a go-to, like, I'll just say Fiona Apple was regularly on my aim.
Oh, hell yeah.
Or Amy Mann. Yikes.
Yeah, you and Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah.
putting the aim in Amy Mann there. I like that.
I was. Yeah. Does anybody want to join me in their confessional for what they put on their aim away
message? I definitely had you take your car to work and I'll take my board. A Weezer quote
very
from
nice.
Surf Wax America.
That's a good one.
I would definitely have a bunch of Weezer shit on there. Here, I'll take you one step further. You want to know what kind of nerd / movie nerd you're dealing with? My high school senior quote was from The Matrix. and it was Mouse saying, to deny our own impulses is to deny the very thing that makes us human. I told a friend that once and they were like, what the fuck impulses were you concerned about at like 17? I mean, it kind of makes a sense of the trajectory in my life that I chose that. But at the same time, I was like, but that's the power of movies. And I wanted people to know that I liked The Matrix. Like I needed people to know that The Matrix was important to me.
My yearbook quote was also a movie quote. Was yours?
I didn't have a yearbook quote.
Oh,
okay.
For God's sake.
I'm sorry. I'm like, I got nothing to add. What was yours?
Better off dead. I think it was
just, I want my $2.
No, I mean, I win. That's a good one too. I would think it was like, go straight fast. And if something gets in your way, turn was my quote.
That's a great quote.
That's cool. Cause that's also like quote. Good pithy life advice that works.
That's what
as a quote.
I was trying to be kind of like, I'm too cool for school.
Yeah. But you're kind of having your cake and eating it too there a little bit. I like that. Yeah.
But I like that Gabe
Justin's, Justin's senior quote was like, if P then Q. Like, oh, cool.
It was just written in logical notation.
Oh my god, it probably was.
It was written. Yeah, it was like written in some sort of like it's got like integrals and stuff. Oh, but David, so yours was The Matrix, but what I think is funny. So it's a deep quote, but it's also that quote. I think he's responding to somebody who's like chastised him for making like a sex.
He made the lady in the red dress.
The lady in the red dress. Yeah.
Well, no, he's like, he's offering to like to Keanu to have sex with her, basically,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. Still don't. Which
no, I mean, I think that's good. You snuck in like a sex, basically a sex quote into your yearbook. I mean, that's pretty kick ass. That's subversive, man. You were a punk rock rebel, John.
Ooh, yeah. Sip into the AG1. Dude, taking care of your health isn't always easy, but at least you can make it simple. And that's why for the last few years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It is 4 p.m. today as I'm recording this ad, and I had it this morning upon waking up. One scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, makes me feel energized, focused, and most importantly, like I'm taking steps towards a healthier day, aka I'm ready to take on that day. And that's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, and more. Powerful, healthy habit that's very easy to kick off. I like to drink it first thing in the morning, which is recommended for optimal nutrient absorption. I use super cold water, which I really like. I got one of those like fridge dispensers finally, which I think is a sign of absolute wealth. And shake it up and I'm ready to go. And then like I was just in South by Southwest for a week there. I had my AG1 with me, of course, in my packet form, putting that in a bottle of water every morning. Shaky, shaky, shaky. Boom, take that down. And then I'm making unhealthy choices the rest of the day. I'm eating barbecue, eating all my meals, mostly from chefs that are working out of the back of trucks. But if I have AG1 in the morning, I feel like I've at least hit a few of my macros. And I know I say this every time, but you've got at least 12 to 16 ounces of water to kick your day off. Because if you've been asleep, you haven't been drinking water for 8 hours, and the body needs water in addition to the vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why they've been a partner of High and Mighty and mine for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's DRINKAG, the number one. .com/MIGHTY. drinkag1.com/mighty. Check it out. Now, I want to talk about, didn't it feel like arguing about movies in like what you imagine the 70s were like, of like artists like smoking cigs and drinking coffee, arguing about what Kubrick was trying to make with 2001 or whatever? And then in like Siskel and Ebert kind of going back and forth, kind of busting each other's balls a little bit. Like that's what my idea of arguing about movies is. But yeah. Now I feel like you could like maybe get shot for saying you didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's
like,
right. Yes.
It feels like the fever. I mean, granted, yes, I'm talking about maybe societal wide, but there seems to be like the idea of like a friendly argument doesn't seem to like we seem incapable of that. We've lost like a layer of thick skinnedness or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is an important point because it's the flip side to the thing I've been saying, which is so the one side is we make these choices, we determine our aesthetic lives, which makes us sort of in some sense who we are. But the flip side of that is that it's not a project that you want to undertake by yourself. Right. It's not like we just go into the void and we just decide these are the best things for me. I want these things. And then we come out of the and we're like, here are my things. Here's who I am. We're somehow creating ourselves with each other. You know, we're doing this. We're watching movies together and then we're talking about them. And what Laura says to me changes my mind about the movie and vice versa. And then that becomes a part of, you know, who I am. I realize, oh, that was a cool way of seeing it, this and that. And I think what Siskel and Ebert and what the like, you know, 70s film critics and stuff, were doing was they were modeling that kind of disagreement in a really productive way. Because right. those kinds of disagreements, those are ones where it's collaborative, where we're trying to help build each other into more interesting people, so to speak. Well, and
we're talking about is maybe what I'm looking for is arguing for the sake of exploration.
Yeah.
Whereas mm-hmm. now I believe it's arguing for the sake of winning.
That's
Everything
right.
Everything is down to winning and losing now. Like, oh no, you don't like my movie. I refuse to lose this conversation.
Right.
And it's like, that's not the case. Let's get into it. Let's discuss. Let's get some idea. Maybe you bring up something that I haven't thought about with this movie or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
The tension is that, like, once you reach a settled opinion on something, then suddenly, like, somebody disagreeing with you hurts. But before you've reached that settled opinion, where you're kind of like, I'm leaning towards liking it. I don't really know. Let me hear what other people say. Then that doesn't hurt because we're helping each other form our opinions. And I think the challenge is to figure out how to reach a settled opinion, but one which is itself revisable, right? So because you can't live a life where you don't have any settled opinions. You got to choose things
can't
to like.
Can't be amorphous and, to be like, yeah, I'm still on the fence about that. Like about everything. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll wait and see. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me talk to a few more people and see what, and then I'll make up my mind. That would be really weird too. So it's this tension of like, you simultaneously need to have an opinion. That's part of who you are is having an opinion, but you don't want to be so wedded to it that it's painful for you to have to other people disagree with you because I think I do think it's natural though. Once you pick a side, there's some degree of discomfort and pain associated with people disagreeing because you're like, maybe I made a mistake. And so I just think this is like this push pull, right? This like tension is, I think, the essence in a way of like aesthetic disagreement, like of the kind of disagreement or arguing we're talking about. And so I think it's inevitable. We're not going to escape it. I don't, it's not something we can like therapy will get over because I think it's right. The way I've described it, it's like a dilemma. It's like a logical dilemma in a sense. It's not a psychological one. And I think that's what I think is so anyway, it's just for me, it's like, it's something I've been attuned to in the last 5 or 6 years when I've been really getting into watching a lot of movies and stuff. And then thinking about how my disagreements about movies are related to my disagreements in philosophy, because they are similar in a lot of respects. And I find disagreements in both dimensions difficult. But at the same time, I think we have to keep doing it. It's like an inevitable situation. Because if you weren't to do it, you would be living a really shitty, impoverished life. Like if you didn't have things you liked or cared about enough, that would suck.
Yeah, it's hard for me not like. I want to logically, I could understand not attaching any of my feelings to my art appreciation, like preventing my feelings from being hurt by someone disagreeing with me. Of course, I'm attaching feelings to art constantly. Yeah. But like, I'm the type of person too that, like, if I pick the restaurant and we're going to it and like I could see that like Laura's not like into it, I'm like, I take it so personally. Yes. Like, and I just don't, and I just don't want that anymore. But There's these things where we have to like stand by our decisions. So like, it's like, well, Gabrus wanted to go to fucking TGI Fridays. I was like, I didn't want to. That was the consensus. It's where we all ended up. Fuck no. Please don't. I don't want to die for this. You know, like Tiffany's always like, relax. I'm not blaming you because if she gets the bad dish at the restaurant I picked, I'm like, I'm so fucking sorry. I'm really sorry.
I know. I feel that way too. I mean, I think one way around to some extent that is to mitigate how much we are in the mode of recommending, because there's one thing which is like the appreciating mode where you're just like, I love this. I want you to love it, but I kind of know you're not into this type of thing, so I'm actually not going to recommend it to you, but I'm still appreciating it, and I'm kind of okay with you not coming on board. And so I think like that's one way to kind of try to thread the needle a little bit, is to just be less in the recommending mode, because as soon as you recommend something, you're sticking your neck out, right? Mm-hmm. But even liking something, I think, is in a way sticking your neck out. Because suppose, Gabrus, you were just like, I like this restaurant. And you're not like, I don't want to recommend it to you, but they go anyway and they don't like it. It still hurts, but it hurts a little bit less because you might have been like, well, I didn't like tell you to go to it.
Yeah.
Right. But, right. You're the one who went to it. Yeah.
I was just told you it was good. But yeah, so I think like there is this, like there are these like layers of like, but of course I think it'd be really weird to just be like, I just like it and I don't care if anyone else doesn't like it. Like, I don't know. I find that maybe you can get that attitude, Laura. Laura's looking at me like,
no, I think I do try to cultivate that as a defense mechanism. And I think, you know, the fact that you and I disagree about movies is because I trust you a lot to be able to do that. Because I think my mode in a, you know, in a workplace environment, you know, if somebody's like, I love Love Actually, I'm just like, mm-hmm, good movie. Good movie. What's that over there? You know, like, I just don't want to, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum, and I don't want to like have them judge me, and I don't want to judge them. And I'm just like, I don't trust that this relationship can survive this disagreement.
Whoa. I like that phrasing. I don't trust that this relationship can survive this disagreement. It's like,
and it did happen once at work, the workplace, where like I said something about not liking The Notebook, and this girl was literally like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Everybody, if you don't, she said, if you don't like The Notebook, you have no heart. And I swear, we were, I mean,
whoa,
that was that for me and that girl.
That's fucking crazy. Well, it's funny. Look, this is touching on something else I'm like learning in therapy and, by talking to people frequently. The idea of being right versus just being happy in the moment is also like, not that saying like, I have to tell this person The Notebook sucked. That's not you being needing to be right necessarily, but, or be true to you. I found myself being like, actually, no, like at one time at a party, you just say something like, actually, that movie is kind of like cheesy, and like the you know, this version, this movie, which is kind of similar, is even better. And then you've like undone this person, or like, you know, like a good example is like a partner's coworker. You have like one interaction with, you're like, I actually didn't really, and they're like, the next three times you see them, they're like, well, if it isn't Mr. fucking Waterworld, and you're like, yep. Oh my god, I should have just said like, yes, the thing you love is fine. And like, yeah, you like learn that, and it's because your marriage can survive it, but like this miniature interaction here cannot. Like Bodega Guy, you know what I mean? Like that version of like, this interaction should only be under a minute, 90 seconds tops. They're asking me about something. Am I going to really unpack my actual opinion on the Winter Soldier, or am I just going to go like, hell yeah, Captain America's jacked, right? And like, thank you, here's my change, get the fuck out of here. You learn at some points where you're like, it's just not worth the juice ain't worth the squeeze here. Like, let me just fucking get out of this. Yeah,
and I think it takes me a really long time to be able to like, to, because I don't have a lot of confidence in my own opinions and personality, I guess. But I don't know how long it took for me to like be able to disagree with you.
I don't know. But
I have no idea.
I think a couple years. Laura has seen me lose my mind after watching movies like Crazy Stupid Love, right? That was early in our relationship.
Oh yeah,
you watched me like just really like lose it, and
yeah, you really didn't like it, and that's fine. But then you followed me around, like you had to just be like, I need to tell you all the reasons I did not like this movie. And
I'm still this obnoxious. Yeah,
yeah.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger just following around spitting out information like tick-tick.
I'm like brushing my teeth, I'm getting ready for bed, so, and Justin's like, here's another thing that sucks, and I'm just like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Laura is clearly the sane one in this relationship, and what I think is interesting about what you were saying though is that I think you're right that the productive disagreement, the kind of disagreement where it's collaborative, like we're building a kind of, we're helping each other realize our best aesthetic lives, right, has to be founded on a foundation of trust. And that's because when you're in that stage of uncertainty, and even when you're in that stage of like, I kind of like this and I want to stake my flag in the ground here, you open yourself up to vulnerability, because you open yourself up to criticism, because if you put your flag on the wrong hole and someone's like, actually that movie sucks, but this other one is a little bit better than it, you should have put your flag over here. Like they've made a mistake, right? It's like this vulnerability thing there. And I think so. How then, the question then is like, how in a social media age do you cultivate that kind of trust? Because it's interesting that I don't think the internet has totally made this impossible, because I think actually the internet has allowed for people to form subcommunities where there is that trust among the members of those subcommunities. Think about your janitors, the Action right. Boys crew, and the amount of trust, like in those, you know, where your guys are having a discussion within your community and everybody kind of, there's a common ground there and people can maybe disagree quite extensively, but all know they're on the same page, you know?
Yeah, we're all here in Giants Stadium wearing Giants jerseys. We can argue about who our favorite quarterback was but we're here under this umbrella. We're all here as listeners of Cows in the Field, so we can disagree about movie, but we have this basic thing in common knowledge pool we're pulling from, this information pool, this entertainment pool, we're pulling from the same places. So clearly we have some stuff in common, much like, I would say listening to the same Patreon podcast ranks higher than being married in your, I'm just kidding. The people I really connect with are the other Patreon members of QAnon.
That's right. That's right. Well, but it's true. And I think, that's the good thing. Like I'm among the many people who shits on the internet and all the bad things that it's led to and all that. But one of the good things it's led to is it's allowed people, right? The kind of people that I didn't know in high school, because I had a high school of 1,000 or 2,000 kids or whatever it was. And that was a big high school, right? But, within that community, how likely is it you're going to find a group of people who actually all care about the same type of things? Like, I wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons in high school. I didn't know anyone who played Dungeons and Dragons in my high school. Now, it's possible there were people who played. Secretly. I played in middle school, but then by the time I got to high school, I couldn't find anyone to play with in it. And it's that sort of thing where it's like, if I had had the internet, I'd been gaming, online. It just would have been great, I think.
If I had the internet, I would have been getting molested by a guy who said he was a D&D dude.
I did. I mean,
there's always the dark side of the internet. Well, because what you're saying is, like-minded individual, but the internet peels away the layer of where you don't want to offend the other person. Like sitting across from someone, you wouldn't go like, you dumb C word, the tenant rules. Yeah. But like on a message board or in chat or, on a forum or something like that, people might be a little, and then you might be more defensive because you're like, who the fuck is this asshole? So there's like the impersonality of it all, but also the kind of wider net that gets cast where you can find like-minded individuals, but you can also boil down to be like, no, I only like early Michael Mann films, you fucking pig, and it's like, that's because the fucking nichification of everything because the ability that like you couldn't find someone to play D&D with back in the day. But now with the internet, you could be like, I play exclusively with like non-binary, philosophy professors around the world that all play D&D. I have 12 in my group now. It's like this crazy thing where it's like, holy shit, you can have like any, but that might mean that you're like, the non-philosophy D&D people are a fucking idiot. Like, it can instantly become like infighting within a niche. Like, you're just so deep in there. We're like, I'm a diehard Nolan bro. Me too. I love The Dark Knight. I love Tenet. Hey, and we just immediately start fighting. It's like, well, then you guys, we're Nolan bros here. Stop. Yes.
We're all Nolan bros here.
We're all Nolan bros.
It is
bros
true.
Here.
We're all Nolan Everybody bros. Just... There's no.
Hold on.
Yeah, no shade. So, Gabus, I want to ask you, have there been instances where you and Tiffany have disagreed about a movie that in a kind of intense way or in a way that
what was your Hiroshima Monomar?
Yeah.
That we have? No, you know what I mean? Like if anything has ever been an intense fight over something that it's clearly, if it's hysterical, it's historical. Like, if we're blowing up, it's from something deep between us or in our own past or like, I mean, a lot of what we're working on as a couple is not taking it not taking things personally, even because it's so easy just for everything to be personal of like, oh, you want to do chicken wings tonight? It's like, no, not really. It's like, oh, sorry. And it's like, wait, what are you like? What? And then all of a sudden,
you loved my chicken wing recipe.
I know. And then all of a sudden I'm like really hurt. And I'm like, well, it's just that. And like, you know, Tiffany would be like, well, if it was that important to you, just tell me and we'll make it happen. And I'm like, no, it's fine. And I'm like, now I'm like, wait, what am I upset about? It's clearly way more than just us, her not paying attention to collateral all the way through, you know, like, but we've never really, I've had like blowout fights with guy friends that like, I'm just like, okay, well, I will just in 2 weeks casually bring up Dune to reference, like, oh yeah, well, it's better. At least we're not talking about Dune because we had, but like, I've never had anything. I'm not the type of guy that can get there. I'm quicker to go like, fuck it. Why do I care this strongly about my opinion? You're so worked up. I don't have any desire to like, we talked about this briefly over email when we were choosing a topic. Like, I don't have the fucking juice to really stand. Like, if someone's like, this is why Tenet sucks, I would just be like, well, I think I disagree with a few of those. I see what you're saying there, but that doesn't prioritize, that doesn't land in my list of priorities of what I'm looking for in a movie.
But
I couldn't find myself getting really fucking into it because at some point I go like, I'd rather be watching another, like another movie now. Like there's so many things I'd rather do than sit here and let this fight get to this level. But that's something I'm also like, that's like an issue in my life is how conflict avoidant I am.
Yeah. So this is sounding very familiar to Laura.
We spent years trying to work on arguing because like anytime we'd have a disagreement, I'd be like, well, I guess this is it. I'll pack my bags. It's been a great relationship. Justin's like, what the fuck? We're just having a disagreement. And I'm like, yep, that's the end of that. Like, I just like thought like that, you know.
That's so funny because I can understand both of you guys because I'm so computer brained like Justin, but I'm also like so like I'm a heart on my sleeve in some way where I don't go, I'll pack it up. It's over. Like, I'll just be like, oh, you didn't like that? That's totally fine. I totally get that. You're entitled to your own opinion. And then I'm like, I could like see the person's like, are you sulking right now? And it's like, yeah, I don't know why, but I'm really hurt for some reason. Like, and I don't know. And it's because arguing always felt like it was so dramatic in my household growing up. Like everything was screaming always. Mm. So I try to swing the other way and actively became a clown to like make the grownups not be mad. And like, I now attach like a light disagreement about where we should put the couch. Like, I attach that to like abusive parenting. You know what I mean? Like, and that's like my problem where, so now if someone's like screaming at me about like, I fucking loved Dune 2, I'm like, leave me alone, dad. You know, like, and it's like, everyone's like, oh, this is not what this is, but
So,
and mine's the opposite. My parents never, ever, ever argued in front of me. And so I just didn't have any models for what like productive, normal, calm, banal disagreement might look like. And I thought like, well, if you argue, then like, that's just, your relationship is doomed. It's not good.
Right.
Like,
for a relationship to be working, it should be never arguing.
It should be like, totally perfect. And you know, like now I'm like, how did that, somebody must have been disagreeing inside a few times, you know, I don't know. But I just didn't know what that looked like.
Well, I could say the reason I find it very hard to agree to disagree is that I've had a number of occasions in my life where somebody has convinced me that my view was wrong. Mm. And when that happens, now it's, I don't totally understand what's going on when that does happen, but it has happened. There was a very prominent occasion occurred on our podcast with the film On the Rocks because I watched this movie with Laura. This is a 2020 Sofia Coppola film. And I was like, yeah, that movie kind of was fine. And Laura had a very profound experience watching it. I think you were almost alone in that regard because this movie has largely been forgotten.
Yeah.
But then we had this extensive discussion on the podcast because we were having this conversation, you know, over breakfast and lunch. And I was like, oh my God, you're raising all these interesting points. There were just things in the movie that I had not seen. And I had not seen specifically because of certain, like, you know, gender structures and things that I'm involved in that are very different from ones Laura's involved in. And so I was actually, I was in a sense, literally blind to certain aspects of that film until Laura was able to point them out to me. And then I had a greater appreciation of the film. I came to appreciate it and enjoy it a lot more. And it's that kind of thing where I'm like, whenever somebody disagrees, I'm like, oh, but maybe this is an on the rocks situation. Okay. You know?
You're trying to get to the truth.
Yeah. It's risky. You're like, maybe I am just literally blind to something. I mean, this happened to me recently with Asteroid City on my own. I watched Asteroid City. I didn't really like it. I watched it again and I was like, wait a second. I actually really love this. Mm. And I can see myself loving it even more as it goes along. And I'm like, how did my opinion shift so quickly? Anyway, I find this very mysterious, but I'm always worried that when people disagree, because I'm like, maybe I'm missing something, or I'm seeing it the wrong way or whatever.
Or you liking it and them disliking it. And you're like, maybe I need to watch it again to see if I actually really like,
yeah, exactly.
I find so funny, cause I wasn't even thinking of like someone arguing with me on the pro side, because I so rarely am the person who's like, no, that movie sucks. Like, I'm so infrequently that person, at least in my friend groups. And like I'm the one who's constantly defending. I'm always the one who's like, oh, I thought it was good. Oh yeah, that didn't bother me that much. Oh yeah, no, I see that, but that's not something that clocks for me as an issue when I'm watching a film. Like, I'm more on that side. Like, I guess I wasn't even thinking of, like, I've never, like, my own brain wouldn't let me be in a situation where I'm like, I hate that movie, convince me. Like, I guess I didn't think about it like that. Although, funny you mentioned, I can't believe I don't remember a Sofia Coppola movie that came out in the last 5 years. I just had to look that up.
Nobody knew.
Yeah.
On the rocks. Yeah.
Yeah, heads here too. We should have been watching that.
Yeah. I'm curious. And it is good. It is one of these things where
it doesn't feel like her other movies.
It feels
like,
very slight.
Yeah.
And that's what I was picking up on, but I was picking up mostly on surface stuff, and Laura had a much, you know, more, a richer experience of the movie, in part because it spoke a lot to gender division of labor that Laura was able to pick up on more than me. So anyway.
Oh, I mean, I'm always down for someone who knows more about it. Like, I mean, that's what the entire premise of High and Mighty is, more or less. Like, someone who just knows slightly more about something talking to me about it. Like, that, there's nothing better in the world for me. Like, if my dream movie podcast would be like, I watch a movie and then I have an expert in, like, not necessarily the movie, but in the field from the movie. And I just talked to a fucking temporal pinza movement guy.
Or safe cracker.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you did just start making Michael Mann movies, right? Like, isn't that what Mann did, like, for Thief? He, like, got actual safe crackers to like, do the, and then he, like, I don't know, he trained up the guys so that he could do the stuff.
Like, Dennis Farina was like a cop and like became an actor because he was a Chicago cop. And then like, cause he was a consultant on some fucking Michael Mann stuff back in the day. Like, Mann is so cool. Like, he's friends with criminals and cops alike. And like, you know what I mean? Like, he knows, like, the dudes who did like the fucking heist that Heat is based on. Like, he's like, talked to them for, you know what I mean? Like, that's my dream in life is to be in a movie where I have to do, like, oh, I just want to have to go to training for my movie. Like, I want, send me, I have to do a ride along. I have to go to boot camp. I have to learn how to halo jump. Like, anything like that, I just want on the company dime. I'll do steroids for Disney movies, whatever. I'll do whatever you guys want me to do. I just want that world, like that, like, adult learning situation of like, it's time to go to movie camp. Like, I love the idea of that.
I feel like that could be a thing, right? Like escape rooms, but instead it's like you do like, you know, an 8-hour basic training thing where you get to shoot all the guns. And
I guarantee all that should exist, because we almost did for someone's bachelor party one time. There's like a spy school where you can like go, and it's like, it's a little more, you know, not for professionals, but it is like for bachelorette parties. You like do a evasive driving class, you do like a spycraft class, you do like a how to tail someone. And like, over the course of the day, there's like a bunch of different workshops. I was like, this sounds fucking radical. In 2024, like, you just, if you have any money, just Google like, I want to learn blank, and you can find, like, especially if you live in a major city, like, you just have access to like so much weird shit. Like Los Angeles is the best for that shit. Like, I literally take Jeet Kune Do, a highly specific martial arts, in a park with 15 other people. Whereas like you can't even find 15 people in Justin's high school that played D&D.
Yeah,
and I found 50.
Zero. But Jeet Kune Do, but isn't it? So that's Bruce Lee's martial art, right?
That's Bruce Lee.
Which he created in Los Angeles though, right?
Yes, it was made here more or less. So but it is like the idea that you can find that, like I would take a class that like.
That's so cool.
Did you see going around while we're talking, going around Austin Butler? There was a video going around of him on the gun range doing reloads and fires and stuff because they're rumored that he's going to play young Chris from Heat. He's going to play the young Val Kilmer role in Heat 2. And they showed a close up of him, and he looks he's at the same gun range that Keanu always has like videos posted from, the gun range in Los Angeles that like all the movie stars go to, and it looks so fucking rad. And I'm like, I don't like guns at all, but I wish I had to like take like a pistol class for a movie. Yeah. Like it would just be so, he's like unloading and reloading the pistol so fucking fast. It's so fucking cool.
Oh my God. That, yeah, he would be good. He'd be really good in that role. He's a kind of Val Kilmer vibe.
Yeah.
So, but he's got to get the reload fast enough, right? Because that's the famous thing, is that they showed people.
Allegedly, they showed the clip from Heat where Val Kilmer empties a clip and then reloads it. They showed it to Marines in basic training before.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Allegedly. Oh, that seems that's like one of those like movie legend rumors that he's so fast at reloading that they showed that those clips. And it's very funny to hear that, 'cause I'm obsessed with Val Kilmer. I'm a big fan. But he did this interview with Chuck Klosterman way back in the day. I think it was in Rolling Stone. And he was like peak Christian Scientist at the time. And I wanted to like him so bad. And he was just turning me off like every fucking 2 minutes in the interview.
That's tough.
And one of the things he said was, being an actor is actually a richer way to experience something than actually experiencing it, because you have to think about it from all these. And he explains, I know, like the way he explains it is, I know more about what it's like to be Jim Morrison than Jim Morrison does.
Oh, no.
And I was like, ugh, what a write-off. And then later on you hear like, he's actually really good at reloading clips. I'm like, oh, maybe the guy's maybe he's onto something.
I mean, I think it's actually a really interesting idea. I mean, in defense of what he's saying, because I mean, what he's saying is effectively by having to think explicitly about the performative aspects of the role, these are things Jim Morrison never had to think about. He was just Jim Morrison,
just
living his life. And Kilmer has to think about all these details explicitly so that he can channel them into
and how to get himself to be there, and what does that mean? He's got to really know Jim Morrison, quote unquote, inside and out, allegedly. But that's the kind of shit that turns, like, that I like when like my heroes are like, I don't know, Harrison Ford guys who say shit like, I don't know. They had me up there on a green screen with a gun. I don't know. Like, I love, like, actors were like, it's just make-believe. Those are the guys, the old school actor, the macho guys who are like, I don't do that prissy. They're all Stella Adler trained and shit, but they're also like, oh yeah, I'm a boxing and a car mechanic as well. Like, I like those old school dudes who would not be talking about fucking Alexander technique or whatever.
No, that's right. Yeah, we watched Witness again recently, and Harrison Ford has this natural charisma, you know? And I'm just like, that guy's a good actor.
He's objectively
hot. Wait, take.
Which one is that? Is that the one where
it's the Amish one?
Oh, the Amish one. Okay. Because there's also the one where he's like maybe has killed his wife and is being defended.
Fugitive.
By...
I also get those two mixed up.
Well, sorry. No, Fugitive and Presumed Innocent.
Presumed Innocent is the one. Oh, yes.
Presumed Innocent.
I didn't even realize that they're all circling the same kind of fucking
He's been doing this.
There.
Yeah.
And not, don't even get started on the Jack Ryan ones where you're like, which is the one where he goes to Colombia? Which is the one where he goes to Ireland? They're both both have titles that have nothing, you know. The Harrison Ford movie that I recently saw that really turned me on to the kind of acting he's capable of is the Roman Polanski. Of course, we're very pro-Roman Polanski on this button.
That's right.
Obviously.
But Frantic is awesome. It's like an old school movie where it's like, it's so basic what's happening in the movie, but he's so fucking good in it, and everything you need from the character, whether you in moments when you need to believe him, in moments when you need to be a little scared of him, in moments when you need to be a little embarrassed by him, he fucking Ford brings that in every fucking scene. It's so fucking awesome.
We need to see this, Laura. I don't know why I haven't seen Frantic.
Put it on the list.
But it is now
it's
on the list.
It's a very simple, like, oh, this is just a movie. And it is, like, from in the pantheon of, like, what happened to Harrison Ford's wife. Like, he's constantly in movies about, like, something happened to my wife.
No, this
the firewall got my wife. And that character regarding Henry did something to my wife. There's a movie I actually haven't seen. I should see that.
No, I've never seen that one either. Yeah. I mean, Ford
let's
is like...
Let's both watch it and argue about it tonight.
Let's do it.
Ford is somebody we sometimes disagree about.
It's true. Laura has been a little hot and cold on Ford. But was it Witness where you were a little hotter on him?
Yeah. I know. I think he just often plays a particular archetype that I find that, like, the negging, like, prickly guy who's just mean to a woman and then she finds it hot and then they make out.
Yeah.
Or he's like too pushy sexually. Like, I think Han Solo, you know, listen, there's a lot to say that's like cool
Indiana
and cinematic
Jones.
And Indiana Jones, Jesus. Right, yes. Right. Indiana Jones 2 is rough. I just think he tends to play this archetype that I find like really unappealing.
Yeah. But he's a victim.
And he's good at it. Because he's a good actor.
He's a little bit of a victim of the time. He was like in exclusively that era where it's like, well, you're a man. You try to kiss this woman until she comes around to the idea of kissing you.
She's
going
like, to love
you
it.
You got it.
You're Harrison Ford. Yeah.
Well, 3 Days of the Condor pretty much has like the worst version of that ever. Like that's Robert Redford like slaps the woman until they start just dating for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, that but that's I think where Witness is different though, because in Witness he's much more. He's in a vulnerable
she's in charge
state.
Of
yeah,
that
he's vulnerable
relationship.
Because
she's making the decisions for what's going to move
forward.
This
is Kelly McGillis, incredible in Witness. Also, like that was something which we had seen it before, and I was like, yeah, this movie's fine, and we rewatched it. Peter Weir, I think 1990 or 89 or something, and. But the McGillis is, I was just like, wait a second, where has Kelly McGillis been in all my life? You know, like she's so like
she just did like Top Gun and Witness and
I know.
Disappeared, right?
That's it. Yeah.
I know.
Well, not that's something that I know of, but
I know, but I just think you know, but really Witness was I thought even for me, like it was such a different performance from Top Gun too. That anyway, incredible. But
We should fight about this. We should argue.
Yeah.
Well,
I was going to ask you, Justin, because you started off the podcast saying, like, I don't, like, it makes me uncomfortable to disagree.
Yeah.
Does it make you uncomfortable to disagree with me, or do you find it kind of fun? Because I kind of thought you found it fun.
No.
And if you find it fun, also, like, what are you trying to do when we disagree with maybe? Are you trying to find a consensus?
No. Well, sometimes, yes. But I feel like, because you're right, what I got to the bottom of in our conversation this last 30 minutes or so was you saying it's the like foundation of trust that we have, which allows us to disagree in a productive way where I think we're trying to help each other rather than hurt each other.
Yeah.
And that's what I do like about our disagreements is I often go into them thinking Laura can convince me and I'm ready for that. And if you don't, and I can't convince you, then I'm uncomfortable because then I'm like, oh, no, now we're in the tension again.
Okay.
But often we find some conciliation, I think.
Well, how do you feel like about our perpetual disagreement about Forrest Gump, for example? Because I don't think I've heard all your arguments. I respect them. I love that you love Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I get it.
And I think you make beautiful arguments for it. But I am not convinced. And so
I feel like this is an argument that I could have with myself.
Yeah,
like I feel like
that's
it's,
the thing
I feel
about
like
that movie.
Forrest Gump's interesting choice because you can easily just you know what both sides' arguments are.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's so funny. Of like, well, why do you think it rules? Well, why do you think it sucks? Well, like
well,
I mean, it's
yeah,
like
you know, it's both there, and I think we have settled on which side we're going to find the most compelling.
Yeah,
and we've. But so do you find that dissonance, like, does that continue to irk
you?
Because I kind of just think it's beautiful that you love Forrest Gump.
Well, I can tell you. In this case, I think the reason is my love of Forrest Gump has almost nothing, I think, to do with my justifications for loving Forrest Gump. The justifications are all post hoc rationalizations.
Got it.
In the case of Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
And I recognize that. So my love of it really stems from the fact that I saw it at a certain point in my life. It became an important movie to me, and it's mm-hmm. a comfort movie to me. I like, you know, I just enjoy very base dimensions of the movie. It, like, you know, it moves me in a really simple way. But then I'm happy, because I'm a philosopher, to come up with a million post hoc rationalizations about why Forrest Gump is an argument for reparations and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to throw that at you, but I don't fully like believe them.
Right. So. But you're still not hurt by the fact that like that I don't.
Yeah,
like
because
it.
I think because for me it's
personal, and I think that's how a lot of people feel about movies. Like they did watch it as a kid, and it meant something to them, and that's why it's painful if somebody's like, oh, like
yeah. But in this case, it's because I see that we're seeing the same thing and just having different reactions, and so mm-hmm. there's nothing more to be said at that point. It's like I just have this reaction, you have that reaction, but we are seeing the same thing because I've got it.
And so sometimes you're like, if we're disagreeing, we didn't see the same movies, or I missed the details.
Exactly.
And we have to uncover that. And in this case, there's nothing more to uncover.
I think that's it. We just hit bedrock. It's like I like certain flavors of ice cream. And
I think
you
that's
like
a strong place. I think that's a strong place for an argument to end on. Be like, oh, okay. Well, I don't agree with what you like about it. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then we're both taking away different parts of them. Like that's a strong place for an argument to end, where you see like, oh, we're not gonna find consensus here. Like, okay, I see that now. Like, and being able to say, as long as you don't go like, I'll never understand Laura. She doesn't like Forrest Gump. Like, I think like that's the safe place to be in with movie opinions and movie arguments.
Yeah. I think like at the end of the day, not every human is the same, right? Some of us are like disposed to.
You just blew my mind.
As I said off mic, philosophers say obvious and ridiculous things, but as if they're profound truths all the time. This is part of the job. So, but one of the things that it's the dimension of that is that like, you know, I can live with the fact that you and I are just different in that regard. It's an irrational difference between us. It's like
the fact, can you define your terms for irrational?
It just means there's nothing that I could say that would convince you, give you any evidence or reason to convince you, because your taste buds are different from mine or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I don't like is when I'm in a situation where I feel like our taste buds are aligned. It's mm-hmm. just that we're seeing the thing differently, which means I'm either seeing it wrong or you're seeing it wrong.
And someone needs to articulate better to get the person to the other place.
Exactly. That's
or
what
if both of you are
seeing
it correctly, but you're just not seeing it from the exact same angle.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm curious what are you seeing from your slightly askew POV? What am I seeing? Let's compare notes here and, you know, take away. Because we do that all the time, because we're watching movies, even though we're so similar and been together for so long, we're still watching movies from completely different crazy places where we're like, I'm like, oh, that's what you thought they were going for there? It's like, no, I thought they were going to do this. It's like, okay, you know, and it's like we have to like sometimes look up the filmmaker's intent to like for one of us to be like proved through, if at all.
Yeah, we're just Don't do that with a philosopher in the room, because they'll just say the filmmakers, and that's just one more thing, and it's one thing of many. And there's so many times that like Laura and I will kind of get in like a little thing about the interpretation, and then I think you often will bring it up. You'll be like, well, it doesn't matter what the author meant or intended by. We all know that's just meaningless.
I was wondering, because when I said that, I was like, oh, does that really have any bearing on the end of like a discussion of art? Of like, no, what Raphael was going for was this. And it's like, well, that's art. Once it leaves once it's into distribution, it's kind of out of Nolan's hands, how people interpret it as art, whether whatever he's going for.
I mean, I think there's, I think it plays, I do think it plays some role in this sort of how we're to be guided in what, how to watch a movie or whatever, the, how we were intended to be. But there are a lot, I think there are a lot of limitations on that. And I think it does not completely settle it. And that's part of what's kind of interesting about art, which is, I think, makes art different from language. So one of the things with language is that, like, for the, it does feel to me, for the most part, what my intention is to say is what I said. So if you, you misinterpret me, if you got my intentions mixed up and you thought I said something that I didn't intend to say or whatever. But I think that's very different in art, where it's something where the community, as you put it, like, it's out of Nolan's hands now. The community now has it and they get to mold it and work with it. And that makes it very different from when I, you know, when I make a statement or write something down, like write like a contract down or an oath or something, where that feels like it's coming from me and it's not, you don't get to really jump in and your interpretation isn't as valid as mine. Whereas in movies, it does feel like the fans' interpretations, they're not equally valid, but they have more weight. And I think that's part of what's fun about it.
Right. It's not like an end all argument to be like, well, that's not what the filmmaker intended. It's like, it doesn't matter what they intended. We're here now. So like, it's interesting that is like, you can bring that to a movie argument, but that isn't necessarily, a nail in the coffin.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily wrap the argument up.
Yeah.
Speaking of wrapping up arguments, let's go to closing statements. This is where we, I want everyone to say what sucks about Forrest Gump and what love. No.
Oh my God. No.
No.
I do not want to get involved here. I do not want to be in the middle. But let's talk a little bit about cows in the field. I always call it cows in the pod because cows pod. Cows pod on all social platforms.
Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about your podcast.
It's a movie podcast. We talk about, ostensibly it's philosophical themes in popular films. It's the two of us and a guest. Sometimes that guest is John Gabris. Other times that guest is a friend of ours, like just some random friend of ours, not someone who's super funny. But we try to unpack the film, disagree to some extent. Sometimes we disagree. But in each case, what we're trying to do is do that thing where we try to help each other see the movie from our perspective, but learn from other people's perspectives and come to some kind of shared understanding about it. And oftentimes that involves unpacking a certain philosophical idea. Like, I think for Minority Report, we did the concept of middle knowledge, mm-hmm. which is God's knowledge, if there is a God, and if God did have such knowledge, big debate in the medieval era of philosophy about whether God could know what free creatures would have done in situations they didn't find themselves.
Sometimes it's that serious. Sometimes I'm just like going off about how hot Brendan Fraser is, and you're like squirming in your seat because you're uncomfortable. I bring.
We did Brendan Fraser miniseries.
The idea, sometimes I'm going off about how hot Brendan Fraser is, to be immediately followed up like, we did a Brendan Fraser miniseries. It's very funny.
Sure did. Just three episodes of me being like, so hot, and Justin's like, can we talk about this movie now, or like,
he
what
is,
we did
he did was talk, a hunk still is
yeah we did have a really good conversation about Encino Man, which a movie that about male friendship. I mean, that's another thing. So sometimes it's like very like heady philosophical concepts, and sometimes it's just like, you know, relatable things, like how it's very hard for men to have friendships and to be vulnerable with one another. Yeah. That's
without
a common,
the capability theme of wheezing the juice. Like, what would guys even be able to do with each other? You
exactly.
Know?
So that's Cows in the Field. Yeah, we could find us on various things. We're at Cows Pod on Twitter. Yeah.
I highly recommend the podcast. I was a longtime listener before I was a guest, so I'm a big fan. If I had to sell it to someone and you guys weren't around, I'd be like, it's a movie podcast, but they don't talk about what you think they're going to talk about when it comes to the movie.
And like, I like that.
And I do, like, I mean that as a compliment, where it's not like you guys, because also I listen to all my peers are comedians. So it's like they're going to find the part and like dig in on something funny that happened in the movie.
Oh, yeah,
like
we're not funny.
Yeah. Well, you're not purporting to be? That's not the word I'm looking for there. You're not saying you are. So uh-huh. No one's coming to that and be like, this better be fucking hysterical. But then
yeah, sometimes it's not.
And then you guys have like interesting people, interesting guests on, not fucking goofy over the top freaks, but people who are super, you run in your little fucking nerd circles. So you get a lot of interesting, smart people to come through there. And then also you have like a listener base made up of like weird cinemarati or whatever. So they show up all the time too. So I highly recommend it to people if you haven't listened. Pick a Thanks, movie man. You like and listen to their episode, or pick a person, a third person you like and listen to that episode. I'm sure listeners to this pod will enjoy themselves.
Thank you, John.
Cheers, man. Yeah, thanks for having us on. Yeah.
Please, this is my long time fandom finally coming into fruition. I'm stoked to have you guys here. As for me, I have a movie podcast too called Action Boys at actionboys.biz. And check out my travel show, 101 Places to Party Before You Die, still on Max as of now. Justin and Laura, the cows, thank you so much for coming on High and Mighty. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. This is so fun.
Bye, shitheads. All right, now before we get out of here, yeah, Forrest Gump fucking sucks, Justin. No.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators. We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room here.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on!
Do it now!